This is Free Talk Live, and you can bring up whatever's on your mind. All you have to do is join us via this toll-free number. It's 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And joining you in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
And Johnson.
And Daryl.
Of course, you can join us also on Skype at Skype username lrn.fm. So feel free to connect with us in whatever way works best for you. Coming up, we got an update on the DUI that a man was given for caffeine. We'll get into that story coming up here in moments. And Johnson, you brought in a news piece from WTVR6 in Lebanon,
Virginia. I actually got it from somewhere else, but then I went looking for a video and I found that there was a video in that one.
So yeah, this is amazing. And I think this is where we should start tonight here. Lebanon, Virginia, where a man used 300,000 pennies to pay taxes on two cars.
That's a lot of... I mean, I don't think people can just visualize what 300,000 pennies looks like off the top of their head.
It is hard to visualize that.
Let's just say 100,000 pennies just about fills a wheelbarrow.
In this case, he's got five wheelbarrows.
Oh, no, never mind. It doesn't fill a wheelbarrow.
Five wheelbarrows. I mean, they're not filled, but you wouldn't want to fill them, or you...
I thought he only had three.
Be more likely to spill them. He's got them, I would say, three quarters of the way filled with pennies.
And I'm just trying to think of how heavy that would
very,
be.
Very,
because,
very, very
heavy. Because, you know, like, I filled up a 32-ounce jug with change.
That's insane.
And, you know, that weighs several pounds.
Yeah, exactly.
And a wheelbarrow is a lot bigger than a 32-ounce jug.
I bet he's glad that the pennies nowadays aren't really made from copper. They're mostly zinc and plastic, so, you know, makes them a little lighter.
Let me just play this video here, because there is a video of this dude going into the DMV, courtesy of WTVR.
Explain, you know, why you brought this many pennies here today.
The reason I brought this many pennies here was to prove a point to the state of Virginia. For their denial of my FOIA request, so they inconvenienced me. I had to file a lawsuit against the state, which the state did turn over the information, and it took time out of my day. So to prove a point, I brought pennies here to the DMV to register two vehicles, and that's the reason, since they were going to take time out of my day, I was going to extend that same courtesy to them.
And now where are these pennies being...
Hold on, say again, you were being drowned out by the pennies.
Right. That they're, you know, being poured onto or into something.
Yeah, he's got totes from the post office, which you're
so
not
he could just give them to them because they're theirs.
Well, no, the DMV doesn't own the post office totes.
Yeah, whatever. It's the state's.
Well, I mean,
according to this guy, right? I mean, I'm sure that's why he used post office totes. It's because it's your property. Here you go.
Maybe.
You're all the same.
Well, it could be. I mean, this guy's pretty entertaining character here. I think technically you're not legally supposed to put anything in post office totes except for postal mail. But nonetheless, that's what he's using to transfer from the back of some sort of truck or SUV into the waiting wheelbarrow in the parking lot. So he had in the totes the pennies, drove them to the location, and then presumably had somebody else with a truck with wheelbarrows in it, several wheelbarrows, and then unloaded them in the parking lot. This is quite an operation here. Now, it looks like he's actually... So they're pouring them from one tote into another, and then taking them... Wow. All right, that was it.
Yeah, he's loading them into the wheelbarrows. I think he just delivered them in the wheelbarrow. I don't know what he did with the wheelbarrows once he got in the state office.
Right, it shows him standing. There's another photo from the Herald Courier with him standing there with these wheelbarrows in the post office. Or no, not post office, in the... this was the DMV. Right, so they denied him a Freedom of Information Act request. He says, quote, "If they were going to inconvenience me, I was going to inconvenience them. I think the backbone to our republic and our democracy is open government and transparency in government, and it shocks me that a lot of people don't know the power of the Freedom of Information request." Stafford told the Bristol Herald Courier that he hired 11 people and spent 4 hours unrolling pennies and putting the change into the wheelbarrows. And there's not much detail here in the TV version, but do you have anything else from where'd you get yours from? Bristol Herald Courier?
Exactly.
It seems like they're the ones with maybe the longer version of the story.
Both stories are about the same
pretty
length.
Short.
There's not much additional information. And, you know, what's interesting to me is I don't think that, you know, he you know, in this case, he's paying for to register vehicles. So it's not like he can do. In one of these videos, I saw somebody paying a fine or a ticket or whatever, and he just went in there with, you know, a huge bucket of change or whatever and just dumped it through the window. Just,
yeah,
there
that was,
you go.
I think,
and just walked out. He's like, send me a receipt.
He was one of the Texas liberty activists.
Hey, like, you've got my address. Goodbye.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, this guy can't do this. He can't just walk in and, like, dump the wheelbarrows.
Nope, that yeah. would make quite a mess. Yeah. But according to the story at the Herald Courier...
Although it would be funny if he brought like a kiddie pool with him and just dumped them onto a kiddie pool.
You
know, like,
you go through it. 300,000 pennies, he brought them to the DMV Wednesday morning to pay sales tax on two new cars. The amount weighed in at 1,600 pounds. You're wondering how much it weighs?
It's like a car.
A mature Holstein cow weighs about 1,500 pounds. So the weight of a big old cow... Stafford had a bone to pick with the DMV.
But it not a golden cow.
It wasn't about agonizingly long lines or a bad picture on his driver's license. It came down to 10 phone numbers. So Stafford filed three lawsuits, spending at least $1,000 to give the DMV his 2 cents. Story goes like this. Back in September, he wanted to know which of his four houses spanning two Virginia counties that he should list when licensing his son's new Corvette. He attempted to call the Lebanon DMV, but was routed to a call center in Richmond. He then submitted a FOIA request, as you probably know, an act that citizens, journalists, and others can use to obtain public government information in order to get a direct number to the Lebanon DMV, which he was provided. Some information is exempted from FOIA, like documents about trade secrets and national defense, for example.
And also, if they don't have documents, they are not required to create a document to provide you.
True.
So if he's asking, you know, FOIA request, which address do I use? Well, they don't keep documents laying around telling you what address to use to register your car.
In this case, he was asking about the phone number. He wanted to be able to call the Lebanon DMV directly rather than being routed through whatever answering service that they might have.
Right, but it started because he was trying to figure out which address to register his new car.
Correct, but that was just a question he had for them over the phone.
Right. My point was, if he put that on the FOIA request...
Right,
and
that wouldn't
we don't
be
know
responsive.
Exactly what he put in the FOIA request, but you know, if he put that in there, then obviously they're not going to respond because they don't have such documents.
That's a great use of a FOIA request. I almost feel like
to find the secret phone number.
Yeah, it'd be good to just get a list of all the secret phone numbers here in good old Keene and then publish them.
Well, the courts use this system in New Hampshire. If you try to call the courts now, you used to be able to call the courts directly, and then they started routing all the calls to a call center,
right?
A toll-free numbered call center, and you can't actually call the local courts anymore. So this would be something you might be able to do here to find out what the local phone numbers are for those courts. So when Stafford called the number that he was given, he said the employees at the DMV told him the phone line wasn't meant for public use. However, Stafford said after repeated phone calls, the DMV, it did eventually answer his licensing question.
This telephone number to the DMV is not for business purposes.
Right. That's why they're trying to hide it. That's only for intra-DMV purposes.
Or for the employees to call and order pizza.
Sure. There is that.
Order Chinese takeout.
But as far as incoming calls are concerned, they don't want to be bugged. They've got some other system for that.
They never want to be bugged. Even
exactly.
When you walk into the DMV, they don't want to be bugged.
Right. So he's, you know, his purpose here is to bug the local DMV agents, and good for him. So again, after repeated phone calls, they did finally answer his question. Stafford then decided he wanted the direct phone lines to 9 other local DMVs. And he said the Lebanon DMVs would not provide those numbers, so he went to court to get them. He said, quote, if they were going to inconvenience me, I was going to inconvenience them. Stafford filed 3 lawsuits in general district courts against 2 specific employees at the Lebanon DMV and 1 against the DMV itself. We'll tell you more about what happened here. This according to the Herald Courier.
I'm also curious how much those lawsuits were, because I know here in New Hampshire, they're not cheap.
This guy apparently has some money to throw around. I mean, he basically
spent... 4 houses.
Yeah, it said on the TV version of this story that he spent $1,000 just to pay this fine. You know, just hauling people around, you know, hiring 11 people to count the money or move the product, etc. It's Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. Toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. 300,000 pennies. That's how many pennies that a Cedar Bluff, Virginia man took to the DMV, I guess this week on Wednesday morning, to pay sales tax on two new cars. Why? Because he was mad that they messed around with a Freedom of Information Act request that he
sales tax or vehicle registration?
It says sales tax.
Okay.
So about
now that 16, he might have been able to just dump there.
About 1,600 pounds is what it all weighed. He said he had to hire 11 people just to assist him as far as unrolling the pennies. So, you know, you got to get the pennies from the bank.
Yep.
Move the pennies from the bank to wherever it is that you're going to try to count the pennies or unroll the pennies, do whatever processing on them that you need to, and then to ultimately put them into totes, which were then used to load the wheelbarrows on the DMV site. This man, according to WTVR.com, spent about $1,000 just paying these bills, just moving these pennies around, hiring people to assist him. Actually, no, according to Herald Courier, he ended up filing three lawsuits and spent at least $1,000 and $1,005 to give the DMV his money. So he'd filed suit against the DMV in this case because they weren't handing over the local phone number to the local DMV. They have like a central call center that you know, that's the listed number. You end up at some central location outside of the city where you typically might be located. And he wanted to be able to call his local bureaucrats directly. And in the first lawsuit, or in the first, I guess it wasn't a lawsuit, but in the first Freedom of Information Act request, he ultimately did prevail and got the local phone number. When he called the local Lebanon DMV, they told him that it was not meant to be used by the public, but eventually, after repeatedly calling them back, they finally did relent and answered his question. He then asked those bureaucrats for the phone lines to nine other local DMVs. They refused to give him those numbers, so he then filed three lawsuits in Russell County District Court, two of them against specific employees at the Lebanon DMV and one against the DMV itself. According to the story at heraldcourier.com, that this week on Tuesday, a judge dismissed the lawsuits at the request of the state when a representative of the state's attorney general handed Stafford a list of the required phone number, or excuse me, requested phone numbers in the courtroom. So that's interesting. They actually basically settled the case. They gave him what he was looking for in order to avoid having to be sued by him.
Good.
The court also did not impose penalties on the DMV and its employees, which could have been between $500 and $2,000 per lawsuit if the employees had, quote, willfully and knowingly violated public records law. Stafford said, quote, the numbers are irrelevant to me. I don't need them. I told the judge, I think I proved my point here. He further said, I think the backbone to our Republican democracy is open government and transparency in government, and it shocks me that a lot of people don't know the power of the FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act request. Brandy Brubaker, spokesbureaucrat for the Virginia Department of Motor Vehicles, said the DMV is happy with the outcome. She says, quote, we are pleased that the court agreed with our counsel that the argument was not a sufficient request to invoke the FOIA statutory penalties. We make every effort to share information with citizens as state and federal law allows. Brubaker said the department fulfills thousands of FOIA requests each year and encourages anyone interested to make requests at a certain email address.
Now, this discussion here about FOIA request reminds me of one of the legislative committee hearings that we were at a couple days ago on, or at least I think you were there. You may have been in a different hearing, but there was a bill to create a commission to examine alternatives to filing a lawsuit when municipal governments do not answer FOIA requests the way they've been asked. And there was a representative of the Municipal Association who basically got up and said, no, the problems with FOIA aren't that any of the municipalities that I represent aren't answering them. It's the fact that people are asking ridiculous FOIA requests, and nobody should have to answer those. There was a town where somebody requested every email that anybody in the city government sent, and it cost $15,000 to fulfill that.
I don't believe
it. And they didn't have to pay a penny.
I don't believe it costs that much money to fulfill that request. What, you bid a programmer to pull the database of emails and put it on a flash drive?
Or maybe, but nah, there's a lot of data there, first of all. And second of all, it probably takes employee time for every single one of the employees as well to do that.
You would think an administrator would have access to, to maybe. That data.
Maybe, maybe not.
It wouldn't surprise me, though, if the government were blowing up the amount of time that it took to, this is so difficult, when really it's just like a few keystrokes,
Right, and...
Well, maybe they were charged 15, it was a few keystrokes, but they were charged that amount of money.
By the programmers, could be.
And prior to that, there was a hearing on requiring minutes of meetings to be posted online as soon as they become available, if the municipality has a website. And most of the people that got up to testify were testifying in favor. And, our city clerk from here in Keene there on the clock testifying against it.
Not only the city clerk, but her deputy city clerk as well.
The deputy was there, but he did not testify.
Right, but he was there.
He was just there
right.
on government money.
Sure. Toll-free number tonight, if you want to join us here, 855-450-FREE. Yeah, the government guys don't like these FOIA requests. They don't like having the light shown on their activities, so to speak. But thank goodness there are people like this guy out there who are willing to push all the way with this stuff.
Yeah, and there was somebody on the committee that asked, how many lawsuits are there per year for people that have filed FOIA requests and they're not happy with the response, or they didn't get anything that they were looking for? How many lawsuits are there?
And potential average, lawsuits, you mean, or actual lawsuits?
Actual lawsuits.
Because I'm sure there's a lot of people who get burned and don't sue.
Right.
Yeah.
So there are, on average, 20 people per year that will file a lawsuit in New Hampshire, or rather 20 lawsuits. So it could be one person files two or three, but there are 20 lawsuits per year. And that rep asked also, how many FOIA requests are there in a year? And of course, the person speaking, I don't know. So when I got to testify, I said, you could always file a FOIA request to find out how many. But I did let the committee know that, my tongue was firmly planted in my cheek when I said that. But
you probably could have said, I've filed more than 20 this year alone.
No. They were talking about initially lawsuits, but then just how, because they were trying to figure out the percentage.
Right. I know. But they wanted to know also probably whether or not there were more FOIA requests than lawsuits. And that would be
They know
easy
that there are
answer.
More FOIA requests than lawsuits. They were just trying to figure, is it 1% of the people that file a suit? Is it 0.0001% of the people that file a FOIA that wind up going to court?
All right, so we get the breakdown here of exactly what it costs. What does it cost to take $1,600? I forget what. I'm getting lost in all these damn numbers.
£1,600,
300,000 pennies, so $3,000. What does it cost to get that in pennies and move it to the DMV? We'll get the breakdown here of what that was like. It's free talk.
$1,000. If you had one day to teach someone economics, what would you say? We would say that innovation and prosperity requires economic freedom. Visit fee.org/courses and check out Economics in One Day, a crash course in free market economics that you can present to your community. For over 70 years, the Foundation for Economic Education has been a champion of liberty. Start today at no charge by visiting fee.org/courses and learn why economic freedom matters.
It is Free Talk Live. You can dial in toll free and join us here. Our number is 855-450-FREE. If you've been thinking about starting up a website here in 2017, maybe you want your own blog or some site for your business or whatever, you can do whatever you want by going to hostgator.com/FTL, and then you'll get 50% off their regular prices. That's 50% off by going to hostgator.com/FTL. They make it easy. There's a simple one-click easy installation for WordPress, plus a 24/7 over-the-phone or live chat tech support, as well as a very intuitive and user-friendly control panel that puts the power of creation and the simplicity of use into your hands. Add to that a 99.99% uptime rating, and you don't have to worry about outages with HostGator. They're one of the top hosting companies out there. So get started over at hostgator.com/FTL. That gets you 50% off their regular prices. For being a Free Talk Live listener, hostgator.com/FTL. As we continue here, a little bit more from the story about the man who paid his DMV taxes on some new vehicles with 300,000 pennies. Now, I'd said earlier it was just over $1,000 is what he ended up paying, but that includes just like paying to pay, basically. Right. So he paid $3,000 worth in pennies, but then he had to pay money in order to pay, because it's not cheap to move around 5 wheelbarrows worth of pennies. You can't exactly do that by yourself very easily. So it turns out that $1,000 that he ended up paying includes the costs of the lawsuits that he'd filed against the DMV, which he was ultimately victorious. Even though the lawsuits were dismissed, he got what he wanted because the DMV essentially settled the case with him prior to the dismissal by giving him the information that he was looking for on a Freedom of Information Act request. So basically, all of this is predicated on the idea that they screwed with him. He filed a Freedom of Information Act request. They denied him. So he was like, all right, we're going to court. Filed the lawsuits. And then, finally, before the actual hearing on the case, they relented, gave him the information that he was looking for, and the judge then dismissed the case because of that. Well, how much did he actually pay to move around this cash? According to the story at the Herald Courier at heraldcourier.com, Stafford had one final act planned. After winning his information from the DMV, he collected the hundreds of rolls of pennies that he needed, hired 11 people to help him break open the paper rolls with hammers on Tuesday night. It took 4 hours, and he paid each person $10 per hour, costing him $440. Stafford also purchased 5 wheelbarrows in which to deliver the pennies. The wheelbarrows cost $400, and he wasn't going to dump the coins on the DMV's floor, so he left the wheelbarrows there, bringing his expenses to $840. Add to that the $165 that he paid for the 3 lawsuits, which means he spent $1,005 to get 10 phone numbers and the satisfaction of delivering 300,000 pennies. Not to mention the nearly $3,000 that he did pay the DMV for the 2 new cars that he'd bought. One might feel bad for the Lebanon DMV employees who chose to count the coins by hand.
What?
But Stafford is within his legal right. According to the U.S. Department of the Treasury, quote, United States coins and currency are legal tender for all debts, public charges, taxes, and dues, unquote, under the Coinage Act of 1965.
Now, I had a bailiff one time try to tell me that I was not allowed to pay a fine in pennies because their sign says we only take cash and checks and pennies or coins. And I told him, well, no, this is legal tender. And he said, it doesn't say we take legal tender up there. We take cash and checks.
Oh, wow. That bailiff has no idea what he's talking about.
I know.
What ended up happening?
I sat there and waited until the clerk came and took my pennies. He threatened to, you know, like have me arrested. And I was like, okay, go ahead. He was like, no, you've got to leave. I said, no, I'll just go sit down right here.
Where was this again?
The court here in Keene.
Oh, in Keene. I wish we could have had video of that. That would have been pretty awesome.
I had somebody go.
She would have been interesting to hear you say, oh, well, if you're going to have me leave right now, then I will sue you personally.
Right. I mean,
I thought I had somebody go with
me. He's getting in the way of him paying a fine.
Remember. Yeah. I don't remember if anybody ever actually went with me or not.
Stafford's penny plot wasn't the first local attempt to pay a bill by coin. In 2009, Bristol resident John Almanay paid his $350 Bristol, Virginia utilities electric bill with pennies, But Almany's 29,000 Abe Lincolns came in at 170 pounds, which was pocket change compared to Stafford's payment, which was, again, around 1,600 pounds. On Wednesday, Stafford brought five of the employees from his vinyl business, Kraft Vinyl, to help him unload the coins. During his process, or the process, one employee wondered how it was going inside the DMV. "Are they mad?" she asked. "Oh no," Stafford said. "They're really nice in there." As of 8 p.m. Wednesday, workers at the DMV were still counting the coins, and Stafford says they expected to finish around 1 a.m. Stafford said he would remain at the DMV until the counting was complete. So he stayed there and hung out all day long as they were counting these. I mean, this is an incredible cost. This guy owns a business. So if you think about it, you know, business owner's time is very valuable. I mean, if he's the kind of guy who can swing $440 or just pay people to smash pennies open with a hammer, he's probably worth, you know, a few hundred bucks an hour or something like this. And I'm sure he'd have been rather...
Right. And again, he has, what was it, four houses?
Yeah. Yeah, this guy's got some
And what was the new car that he had purchased? It said earlier
in
that story.
Did it mention that? I don't know. I don't recall. I'm not going to go through.
Yeah, like it was a fairly nice car.
I suspect it was. So anyway, what an amazing story. It's probably the most epic penny story that I've heard of. So if you've got one that can top it, we'd love to hear from you. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. Let's go to Bo Diddley, calling from South Carolina, listening online at freetalklive.com. Go ahead, Bo.
Howdy, y'all. Hey. I saw a story on the local news here on Facebook that the U.S. Mint is releasing a gold coin with some lady on it. I don't remember who, but the important part, it said the coin is actual 24-karat gold. And I was just blown away by that. I can't believe they're actually reintroducing gold currency.
Well, they'll do that.
Have y'all heard this story?
That they do that every year where they'll make gold and silver coins. Now, they don't release them for general circulation. They sell them as a collector's item and a moneymaker. But yeah, it's not uncommon for, you know, actual gold and silver coins to be made by the U.S. Mint.
Oh, okay. I guess I was just a little bit misled by the story there. I was led to believe they was actually going to be in circulation.
Interestingly, though, I'm looking at the story. I think this is the one you're talking about. January 13th here over at fortune.com. The story here is that it's going to be a $100 gold coin, but it's 1 ounce of gold. So how interesting that they decided to assign an arbitrary number of dollars
required by law to put a value. So the
I mean, it's worth $1,200, right? What's the price of gold today?
Right around $1,200. But the value there is dictated by Congress.
Mm-hmm.
So the 1 ounce silver has a certain denomination on it. The 1 ounce gold has a denomination. The half ounce gold, the 10th ounce. So, you know, those denominations are made by Congress. It's not somebody sitting around in the Mint. We're going to call this a $100 piece.
So there's some old law on the books that values gold at $100 an ounce, and that hasn't been updated since then, basically?
Basically.
Okay.
Or it values the coin at $100 and then specifies the dimensions, but, you know, it doesn't necessarily set the price of gold at $100.
Bo Diddley, any other comments you want to make?
I just say that's hilarious. Thanks for the call.
Yeah. Thanks for the heads up. Appreciate it. I guess, you know, it's understandable that somebody would think that, given that the U.S. government has debased its own currency so much over the years, that it would be a surprise for the average person to find out that, oh, they actually are still minting gold and silver on some things.
Yeah, it's collector items.
Right, just not the change that you
strange choice for who they're putting on the coin, too.
It's
who are
black
they putting
lady
on the coin?
Hetty Anderson, an African-American woman who stood as the model for Augustus St. Gaudens double eagle gold coin design of 1907. But that fact is not widely known. I mean, it's like, who, what, why, a random choice for a person to put on this coin.
Toll-free number tonight, if you want to join us here, 855-450-FREE. You can take control of the airwaves. This is Free Talk Live. I'll give you the update on the DUI case for caffeine. Daryl's got it. Coming up, it's Free Talk Live. You can join us. It's Free Talk Live. You can join us here. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We've got Skype, and you can Skype in at Skype username lrn.fm. Here in studio tonight, it's Ian.
And Johnson.
And Daryl.
And, of course, we'll take your calls about anything that's on your mind. To continue, though, Daryl, you've got a story that's an update on a story we did, what, a couple weeks ago now at this point?
December 26th.
Yes, it's been a couple, few weeks.
And I only know that because I went through the RSS and located
the original story.
Original story.
It's about a man charged with a DUI for caffeine. Now, yes, the state's going to say that that wasn't the reason why he was charged, if I'm recalling correctly.
That was the claim. However, they never provided any information to the man, Joseph Schwab, or Schwab's lawyers.
He blew clean. So he was pulled over and given a BAC check on the side of the road, if I'm recalling the story correctly. He blew clean. Had no alcohol, 0.00 or whatever, nothing.
Correct.
But then they drew blood from him back at the police station.
Right.
Isn't that right?
I don't remember if he blew into the tube on the side of the road or not, but whatever. They ultimately did blood tests.
Yeah.
And it came back negative. They sent the blood to a lab somewhere in Pennsylvania. I forget if it was Pittsburgh or Philadelphia. And
because they wanted this guy for some reason.
The only thing that came up positive on the second test was caffeine. The only thing that came up positive was caffeine. And then about 9 months later is when they charged him with a DUI.
It's ridiculous.
And it wound up mid-December getting international headlines. I believe the story that we shared back in December was from the UK Guardian. And I had a reminder set for myself because his court date was scheduled, I believe, January 11th.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And wound up, doing a search for this guy in caffeine and saw a story from January 4th. And I was like, well, I don't know if that's it. And then I looked closer. Instead of just looking at the date, I looked at the actual headline. Judge dismisses reckless driving charge, ending what defense called DUI caffeine case.
Okay.
So apparently it was changed from DUI to just reckless driving. The reckless driving charge against Fairfield, California man remaining after the district attorney's office dropped a DUI allegation that the defense said involved caffeine was dismissed. So initially they dropped the DUI, charged him with reckless driving, and a week ago they dropped the reckless driving charge.
Wow.
Judge Carlos Gutierrez said he agreed with defense attorney Stacey Barrett that delays in the case deprived Joseph Schwab of his constitutional rights after the August 2015 incident along Interstate 680 near Golden Hill Road. Barrett said after the court hearing Tuesday.
So he won on a speedy trial objection.
Sounds like it.
Interesting.
Barrett said after the court hearing on Tuesday that Schwab should never have been arrested on suspicion of DUI and that the reckless driving charge never should have been filed in the first place. Barrett said this case is about how the government or law enforcement has a difficult time admitting that they've made a mistake.
That's right. They always double down rather than just say they're sorry. It's like, all right, well, what can we come up with? We got to come up with something.
Schwab, a glazier who installs glass in San Francisco high-rise buildings, had to post a $7,500 bail and spend 4 days in jail in connection with the criminal case. Barrett said the damage he suffered cannot be undone.
Right, and this is the kind of case where you would hope that somebody could countersue.
Yeah, like, I was going to say, can he countersue for wrongful arrest? I mean,
I believe he can.
Okay. I sure hope so.
Especially now that all charges have been dismissed.
Right.
Yep.
The district attorney's office said on December 28th that they decided to drop the DUI charge and that Judge Gutierrez dismissed that charge as well on Tuesday.
I mean, you feel like he could, even do even better in this. And, where did he get his coffee from? He gets a sponsorship for his lawyer. That would be a great opportunity for some free advertising, or relatively free advertising. for whatever coffee company he has.
What I find very interesting here is that the DUI charge was dropped 2 days after we discussed this story on the radio.
Well, I, now, mean, I doubt we had anything to do with it.
I'm not saying that, you know, Free Talk Live is responsible, but I do think that the international press attention...
So he was getting a lot of media, is what you're saying?
We got the story from the UK Guardian.
Okay. Oh, so, wow. That's a big story.
There was a lot of press about this.
Right. Well, that's because if this had actually gone forward, and if he were actually charged with a DUI for having caffeine in his blood, and convicted of a DUI of caffeine in his blood, that would be a huge game changer. It would mean that everyone on the road, probably 80% of the people driving to work at 7 in the morning, probably have some sort of caffeinated beverage in the car with them.
Yes. An agent for the California Department of Alcoholic Beverage Control driving in an unmarked car pulled Schwab over at 3:23 p.m. on August 5th, 2015, Schwab performed 8 field sobriety tests, and his preliminary alcohol screening showed 0.0.
He failed 8 sobriety tests?
No.
He performed.
Oh, okay.
I'm guessing he passed.
Yeah.
They then had him blow into the little tube. 0.00 BAC. Toxicology results were negative for THC, cocaine, opiates, and 6 other drugs. Schwab's blood was then sent to a lab in Pennsylvania for further screening and returned a positive test for caffeine.
It's outrageous that they can draw blood from people.
They took the blood after they took him into...
Right. Doesn't matter. I don't...
Anywhere, yeah.
Right.
Well, there was stories years ago about, I think it was Utah... I believe it was the Utah Highway Patrol that some of their officers were actually being trained. They'd go to a 4-hour long phlebotomy class.
Oh, four
I think Texas had that as well.
Yeah, I think Texas did too, to where the idea was that they would literally be pulling blood from people on the side of the road. That's even more scary. Yeah.
After getting an electronic warrant from a judge in his pajamas at 2 o'clock in the morning.
I don't remember that detail of the story, but I'm just, you know, envisioning some state trooper on the side of a dusty road, you know, wielding a some sort of needle and thrusting it into people's arms sounds really unsafe.
Right. And I remember, at least from what was going on in Texas, because it was about the time that I had moved there, they would only draw the blood if the people refused to blow into the tube.
I see.
I got my GED, and now I'm a
That they would basically wind up sending some kind of email to the judge. We got somebody that's not blowing in the tube.
Mm-hmm.
Judge would send a response. Okay, get his blood. So it's electronic warrants. So not actually, you know, going to the judge, and the only probable cause is he doesn't want to blow in our tube.
We can't find a vein in your arm. You're going to need you to bend over.
Back to the story in California. The district attorney's office, in its December 28th statement, said it filed a motion to dismiss the DUI after further investigation and consultation with experts from forensics labs.
Hmm.
The statement says, based upon the lack of drug results, the case did present some challenges. After further consideration, without a...
Yeah, you had no case. That's the challenge.
Yes.
You know, the challenge was that you had no evidence and no case.
After further consideration, without a confirmatory test of the specific drug in the defendant's system that impaired his ability to drive, we do not believe we can prove the charge beyond a reasonable doubt.
And I imagine there are a lot of cases where they really don't have much of a case, but people not realizing that will just go ahead and take a plea deal anyway. And so whenever you take a plea deal, even if the state has no case, you lose. And you've empowered them to continue abusing people. So thank goodness for people like this who stood up for himself in this case. You know, he lawyered up and he went all the way here. It was a lengthy process of, what, more than a year, I think, or something like that?
Well, he got pulled over in August of 2015. They didn't actually charge him with anything.
Until 9 months later?
Until, like, June of 2016.
And now here we are. It's 2017.
The chief deputy district attorney for Solana County, Sharon Henry, says that both sides had an equal opportunity to argue the case and says that the case was never about caffeine.
Well, what was it about?
Yeah. Well, we don't know because we never had confirmatory tests to show what was in his blood, but we know something was there.
I know that Don trained me to use the needle to get your blood, but I'm more used to doing it with my nightstick, so hold real still for a second.
Toll-free number 855-450-FREE. We laugh, but it probably has happened at some point. All right, more coming up here. Hour 2's on the way. Plus, it's Friday the 13th. Johnson's got some crazy stories coming up.
We just got our new Rye Guys t-shirts. I chose the Power Corrupts shirt and the I'm Already Against the Next War shirt. These quality shirts look good and feel good, and they feature clever, thought-provoking designs to promote freedom, peace, and healthy skepticism of modern mythologies. The Rye Guys donate a portion of proceeds to antiwar.com and the Future of Freedom Foundation. Enter coupon code FTL at checkout to get 15% off your order. That's ryguys.com, W-R-Y-guys.com, ryguys.com. It's a Rye wit for today's shit.
Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live. Dial toll free. Join us right here as we launch into the second hour of the program. Our toll free number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And we've got Skype. Skype username is lrn.fm. With you here in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
Ooh. And Daryl.
The microphone's a little messed up there. I apologize. I still haven't figured out what's going on with it. We'll get back into your calls and thoughts. But then coming up, Johnson, if his microphone continues to work, will have for us some Friday the 13th stories, the 10 worst Friday the 13th stories ever.
I guess some of the worst things to happen. Is it my microphone going on? I
think yeah, we'll see what we can figure out about it here in a moment. Let's go first, though, to your calls and thoughts. Stephen is in Washington. You're on Free Talk Live. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, guys. Hey. I just wanted to make a quick comment on what you guys were talking about earlier.
Sure.
In regards to law enforcement drawing blood from suspects. I'll keep it short. I just find it just extremely disturbing and not surprising, of course, but that the idea that they could take your blood from you and force you to incriminate yourself against your will. As a person who has worked very hard to remain anonymous in our current economic situations and political situations, it's very disturbing to me. I worked very hard to make sure no one, no company, or government agency has my fingerprints or my DNA or retinal scans or anything like that. And in fact, I've quit jobs over it in order to avoid that. And so the idea that they would just randomly take my blood and is very disturbing because you know that that's going to be in a record somewhere. You know, your DNA or blood samples are going to stay in a record somewhere forever.
So there's information here I just pulled up from SouthernCaliforniaDefenseBlog.com. When can police draw your blood? In the recent U.S. Supreme Court decision, Missouri v. McNeely, the court decided that police are required to get a warrant in order to draw someone's blood who is suspected of a DUI. Prior to that ruling, the law embraced the exigent circumstances exception for DUI cases because alcohol dissipates from your body over time. The court rejected this view in DUI cases, but it left open the possibility that other facts amounting to an emergency could justify a warrantless search.
Yeah. And yeah, that's extremely disturbing. And it's just, once again, it's just a situation in which I have like no peace of mind. Like how can I have a guarantee that they're not going to draw it in some situation?
And they also say here, if you refuse a blood or breath test, are unable to consent for some reason, then police could obtain a warrant to draw your blood.
Being but again, unable to consent would be being passed out or something like that, injured. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Unable to speak for some reason. But, you know, it's not just, oh, you're walking down the street. Yet. Let me be clear here. You know, yet. Yeah. It's not just you're walking down the street. Oh, we need to do a blood test. Currently, it's, oh, we think you might, you know, have some substance in your blood. We need to take your blood.
Yeah, and the only thing I could think of to possibly avoid that is to, you know, physically resist and, you know, just freak out and shake around and almost, you know, have force a seizure on yourself in order to try to not get the needle in.
If they believe that you're doing that on purpose, you'll get a charge of interfering with police investigation.
Possibly resisting arrest, obstruction of justice.
And there's a felony
in there. Contempt of court. Or not contempt of court, contempt of disorderly conduct.
It could be contempt of court if the judge orders it. If the judge has ordered a blood draw, if it's a warrant from a judge, that would be indirect criminal contempt.
What good is the Fourth Amendment, Mr. Anderson, if you're unable to speak?
Exactly. Just like the Matrix, So anyway, that's all I had to say.
It is
guys.
Scary. Thanks for the call tonight, Stephen. I appreciate hearing from you. And, you know, the answer is when can they take, or the question he was asking, well, when can they do this? Well, the answer is whenever they want. I mean, even if they've done it illegally, what are you going to do about it in the moment? You've got a bunch of hulking state troopers surrounding you, holding you down, forcing blood from your arm. I mean, there's nothing you can do about that. All you can do is sue them after the fact.
Stop your pulse.
Yeah, that's not going to work out either.
You know, like, lower your metabolism rate to where your blood just stops flowing, and then they're not able
to... You got one of them
to...
Dick Cheney pacemakers in you? Just turn it down, no pulse.
Let's go to Ralph. He's in New Jersey. Ralph, you're on Free Talk Live. Hello.
Yeah, good evening.
Hello,
how
Ralph.
Are you? How are you?
Wife? Everybody's very just guilty. Fine here. Very go ahead with your thoughts.
Because I'm... The reason why I say white guilty is this. Okay? This black animal only has been propped up by white guilt over the last 8 years. Now we go to the final... you know, the final or farewell address of a Negro animal in Chicago. Okay?
You're talking about Barack Obama. For listeners just tuning in, Ralph is a regular caller of the show. He is using the terminology El Negro Animal to refer to Barack Obama.
And for the sake of Johnson, too, so he knows the way of Ralph. You know, that's...
For the sake of Johnson?
I'm not new.
Yeah, Johnson, that's you. That's you, my dear friend, Johnson.
Yes. I'm not new to your dear friends, though, Ralph.
You guys are dear friends now. Did you know that?
Okay.
Hello, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Good evening. Good evening to you, by the way.
Is it because the other caller accused me of being racist, now Ralph likes me? Is that what's going on?
Oh, no. That's not very nice. That's not very nice of you to say that. But I believe that the man... word doesn't match up with his action. There's a disconnect between what he is saying and what he is doing. The last 8 years, if I can...
I know, he's saying that he's against war. He got the Nobel Peace Prize, and then, you know, last year alone dropped 26,000 bombs.
Let us summarize the last 8 years. The last 8 years is a fraudulent scheme, a con game, okay, a wide margin of error, and a failed social experiment. That's, you know, the overall, content of the character of this man. That's what he is.
The same thing could be said about George W. Bush. He was a con man. He had 8 years, and there was a failed social experiment. Every president that we've ever had has been a con man.
You have proven my point, white guilty. White Disney has propping up this guy for the last 8 years. That's why he can't do...
We have not been propping up Barack Obama in any way.
Ralph has not listened to anything we said. I said every president... Ralph! Ralph!
Stop shouting, Ralph. Just hold on.
Ralph, I said every president that we've ever had has been a con man, and there's been a failed social experiment under their administration.
How's that propping any of them up?
What, in the case of Obama, look at the media.
The what? Look at the media?
Look at the
media. Well, we are the media.
How the embedded and the right shotgun on the air,
I can't even understand him at this point.
I don't know if any of those things are words or if he's just putting syllables out there.
Yeah, this is why I wish Ralph would get on Skype, because it's hard to understand him just due to the accent, and it's worse because his phone's not that great. Thanks for the call, Ralph. Toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. I mean, I want to know what the guy is saying. Look, we are the media, okay? We're not the mainstream media, whatever that means, but we are on radio stations that are licensed by the FCC. And
what's Ralph going to do in the night after 5 days after, from now?
Is it 5 days? No, 7 days. No, seven?
5 days. Yeah, 19th.
The 19th, so 6 days.
20th.
20th?
It's the 20th.
All right.
I mean, the 19th doesn't really count as a day because that's the day it happens. So
no, it happens on the 20th.
Oh, really? Does it? Oh, okay. Well,
so it's a Friday?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, it's a good question. And I've asked that before as well. You know, what's Ralph going to do? Well, the answer is, of course, he will blame all of the problems that happen in the next 4 years on Barack Obama. Yeah. Sort of in the same way that, you know, Rush Limbaugh still talked about Bill Clinton a decade after you know, he had left office.
Right. And
let me tell you, I'm working very hard this week to close Guantanamo Bay. I've only got a week left. We're working overtime. You can take that to the bank. I don't know which bank. I've been saying it for 8 years, but you can take it to the bank.
So, yeah, toll-free number if you want to join us here, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. I don't see how we have been propping up Barack Obama in any way, shape, or form.
We haven't.
We've given him a little credit for a few things, like releasing some people from prison, but there really isn't much else that's good that you can say about the guy, at least from a libertarian perspective. Toll-free number tonight, 855-450-FREE. Coming up, Friday the 13th stories. Johnson's got them. We'll share them with you. It's Free Talk Live, and you can take control of the airwaves. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. It's also Friday the 13th. Now, in talk radio, you're not supposed to name what day it is when you're doing the talk show because some stations will delay broadcasts. It's terms that they use in the business where they record the show.
It's almost a holiday. I mean, come on.
What, Friday the 13th?
Yeah.
Why?
Because a lot of people do weird things on Friday the 13th.
Like... Yeah, a lot of tattoo parlors will do $13 tattoos.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Now, some people won't leave the house on Friday the 13th.
There are limited selections.
I was going to say, $13 is awfully cheap for a tattoo, right?
Yeah.
Right, but it's generally things that are,
heart.
You know.
Little heart.
One color kind of deal.
Well, they're almost always the black and gray, but they'll have, you know, like, you can get the number 13.
Get
you can get, and they'll have a very limited selection of, you know, like skulls and stuff along those lines.
You get a tear in the letters MS-13 under your eye.
Doesn't the tear mean you've killed someone?
Something. No, just an MS-13 being the gang.
Yeah, right. So the Friday the 13th is, of course, a series of terrible horror movies from the 1980s, but it's also a well-known... it's also a well-known... You know, kind of, what is it? Superstition, I guess, is the word, right?
Triskaidekaphobia.
Triskaidekaphobia.
Now, you said people even leave their house, some people, because they're so afraid of what might happen on Friday the 13th?
Paranoid people. Yeah.
How widespread is that?
I have no idea.
If you're huddling in your house right now listening to us on the radio.
I can't go outside. I'm afraid of all the people, the animals.
Is that your Ralph? Okay. you can join us here if you're afraid of Friday the 13th and tell us why. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. I was actually watching, God, I don't know what, one of those YouTube channels, maybe it was React. I don't remember what it was. But anyway, they've made a new Friday the 13th game. And it actually looks really good, where you can either play as Jason Voorhees, the killer from the movies, or the teenage camp counselors, basically.
Right.
And essentially, it's one of those games where it's a multiplayer game, and the Jason Voorhees character is tremendously overpowered, right? Like, he's super strong. One of the teenagers on their own could not kill Jason Voorhees. You have to, set traps, and there's all kinds of other things. You can't just come right up to him and slash and hack your way to kill him. And watching them play this game, I guess it's in beta right now, but it looks really unique, kind of pretty entertaining. And they really seem to kind of capture the essence of those movies in this video game. Because there have been some horrible Friday the 13th games in the past, but this one really looked like it was pretty spot on. So anyway, you've got a story about the 10 worst Friday
13,
the 13th?
Actually, 13 worst.
13, of course 13.
It's only fitting that it's the 13 worst.
These are the 13, worst Friday the 13th stories?
Things to happen on Friday
from real
the
13th. Life.
Yeah,
stuff
real life.
That's actually happened.
Yeah. So the story goes on to say...
From where? I'm sorry.
You didn't ask me.
I apologize. I just always like to know.
Metro News.
Metro News. All right, very good.
Well, Friday the 13th causes some to avoid leaving their house for fear of something unlucky happening to them. Some may scoff at the idea that a date can cause bad luck, but if you take a look over the events that have gone down over the years on this date, you might end up staying in bed yourself. From deadly viruses to disastrous weddings, here are 13 of the worst things that have ever occurred on Friday the 13th.
Now, before you begin, triskaidekaphobia is the fear of the number 13. Right. Periskaidekaphobia.
Is it triskaidekaphobia or trisaidekaphobia?
There's a K in there. It's T-R-I-S-K-A-I-D. Okay. And then the other one that I attempted to try to pronounce, periskaidekaphobia, is fear of Friday the 13th, okay, specifically.
All right. And by the way, I'm sure if we looked at any other day of the calendar year, we'd also find some horrific things happening. Yeah, yeah. But nonetheless,
The Knights Templar wasn't formed on any day other than Friday the 13th. October 13th, 1307.
Well, the first thing that happened here is the Costa Concordia. In 2012, the cruise ship Costa Concordia partially sank on Friday the 13th, causing the death of over 30 people. The ship was only hours into a cruise of the Mediterranean on 13th of January 2012 when it lost power just off Giglio Island. The huge vessel had over 4,000 passengers and crew on board.
All right.
The second is the IBM crash. In 1989, saw a deadly computer virus crash IBM computers in Britain on Friday the 13th, which deleted a lot of data. This was before backup systems existed, so terrified people were permanently lost information. Damn. And businesses were impacted by the loss. The stock market also crashed on this date, on Friday the 13th of 1989, as the date of the second most damaging crash in market history at the time. Brokers were left stunned as the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 190.58 points.
Bam.
Another one is the Andes flight disaster. On October 13th, 1982, a chartered flight carrying 45 people, including a rugby team, their friends and family, crashed in the Andes, an incident known as the Andes flight disaster. More than a quarter of the passengers died when Uruguayan Air Force Flight 571 crashed, and several others died soon afterwards from cold and injury.
Isn't that the crash where they made the movie?
The movie?
I think it might be, yeah.
Were they, like, ate somebody?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, they ate several of the somebodies.
Well, they were dead already.
But yes.
Yeah. I don't know.
There's more meat in the butt area.
Is that right?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Well, it says a few days afterward, an avalanche swept over and killed over the survivor's shelter, killing 8 of the 27 remaining. The final 16 were discovered 72 days later on the 23rd of December. They had faced little food, no source of heat, and radio news reports that the search for them had been abandoned. Faced with starvation, the survivors fed on the bodies of the dead passengers that had been preserved in the snow. Yep.
Wow. 72 days?
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was that long.
Oh, yeah, yep, and that was the movie Alive.
Yeah, Alive, yep. Swedish plane disappears. A Swedish military DC-3 plane carrying a crew of 8 disappeared over the Baltic Sea on Friday the 13th, June 1952, igniting conspiracy theories which lasted for decades. In 1992, the Soviet Union admitted that it had shot down the plane.
Bam.
There was a Buckingham Palace bomb. The Nazis dropped a bomb on Buckingham Palace on Friday the 13th in September of 1940 during the Blitz of World War II. Apparently, the royal family was taking tea at the time. Kitty Genovese, the birth of the Genovese syndrome, the Kitty Genovese attack, on Friday the 13th, March of 1964.
I'm not familiar with this. Kitty Genovese?
It'll explain a little bit. 1964, bar manager Kitty Genovese was repeatedly stabbed by a stranger, Winston Mosley. The attack took place over a half an hour, with 38 people witnessing the attack and failing to call the police.
What?
Yeah.
How about failing to stop him?
Yeah.
What? 38 people?
Yeah. Yeah. When questioned on why they hadn't taken action, one woman said, "We thought it was a lover's quarrel." Another simply said, "I was tired. I went back to bed." The incident had resulted in what is now known as the Genovese syndrome.
You know, which is what?
People just not reporting a crime or, you know, like attack.
Or not, doing anything about it.
Yep.
That's crazy. I've never even heard of that syndrome before.
Yeah.
Toll-free number here tonight, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. I'd say that's one of the most horrific because it doesn't involve an accident. You know, it's one thing to have a plane crash. It's another thing to have somebody just murdering another person in front of 38 witnesses. I mean, I guess they weren't all at once witnessing it. It was over how long of a period of time? Quite a while.
Yeah.
Right? Toll-free number here, 855-450-FREE, Free Talk Live.
A funny thing happens when you don't advertise. Nothing. Modern advertisers have been trained to look for trackability in their advertising, and web search ads are great for that. They also help you get the consumer that's looking for products like yours in the moment. But they're expensive, and they do nothing to convince people to try your product segment in the first place. They help you get a bigger piece of the pie, but branding mediums like radio grow the pie itself. Free Talk Live's on more than 150 stations, and we can help advertisers with little budgets and big ones. Send me an email, mark@freetalklive.com. It's mark@freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live, and you can bring up whatever you want here. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We've got some horrible stories here in, I don't know if celebration's the right word, in commemoration? I don't know. It's Friday the 13th, and Johnson's got the top 13 most disastrous stories of things that happened on Friday the 13th in years past. We'll resume that here, and you can, of course, share your thoughts, and if you've got a story you want to tell, you're welcome to join us here. It's Ian Johnson and Daryl in the studio, and we've got the MyPillow offer to you with a special discount for Free Talk Live listeners. It's half price if you use code FTL at MyPillow.com. What is MyPillow? Well, it's a pillow designed to fit to the shape of your body and hold your neck in the proper position. I've been using it for a good portion of the last year, and it's been great. Our Thursday night co-host, Chris Reitman, he says he's been using one for years, and it is really a great pillow. If you get one and you disagree, though, for some reason, you don't like it, well, you can send it back to them, and they'll send you your purchase price back. It's guaranteed for the first 60 days. And then beyond that, there's a warranty of 10 years on the product. So again, money-back guarantee within 60 days, 10-year warranty on the product. You can actually wash and dry the MyPillow. It is designed for that. It's a great pillow. They stand behind their product. They believe in it, and they think that you're going to love it. Go to MyPillow.com, code FTL. That's MyPillow.com with code FTL, like Free Talk Live. As we continue on this list, we'll be about halfway through, Johnson.
I think so, yep.
A list of 13 horrible stories from Friday the 13th in real life, yep. Not the movies.
So this one happened on a Friday the 13th, which has a had a full moon, like tonight's. Robert Ballard, on February 13th, 1987, was to attempt suicide by putting his head in a gas oven.
Yikes.
Unfortunately, suicide by natural gassing is virtually impossible since Britain moved from lethal coke gas to natural gas, which is less dangerous. Huh. However, a flicked light switch caused an explosion, which caused 35,000 pounds of damage.
Oh, wow.
And injured his mother and a policeman. Robert was unharmed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Crazy. Dana Hamilton's hair. On Friday the 13th, October 1972, Dana Hamilton Rye... Oh, sorry, David Hanel... Dana Hamilton of Rye, New York, sold her luxurious hair to a local wig maker so she could buy her husband a gold chain for his beloved pocket watch. That evening, she returned home to find out that her husband had sold his watch to buy a pearl necklace for his secretary with whom he was having an affair.
Wonk, wow. Wonk.
Tupac Shakur was shot.
Really?
The rapper died of wounds he received.
Damn it, Biggie.
In a drive-by shooting on Friday the 13th, September 1996. After Shakur's cremation, members of his posse, Outlaws Immortal, mixed his ashes with marijuana and smoked them.
For real?
I guess so.
Wow. Yep. That's different.
In an interview with
And then didn't the ghost of Tupac kill Biggie?
Biggie Smalls got killed too?
I thought they killed each other.
Yeah,
I don't know anything about that.
In an interview with Vlad TV, Edie Mean confirmed what they'd done. I came up with that S. If you listen to Black Jesus, he said, last wishes, and smoke my ashes.
They're saying Tupac wanted this.
Yes.
He wanted his ashes to be smoked.
That was a request he had. Now, how serious was he about it? We took it serious.
Yeah, okay.
Wasp Wedding.
I don't know if you can really smoke ashes, but I get the point.
I guess if you cut them enough with, I don't know. Anyway, Wasp Wedding. A wedding reception on Friday the 13th, August 2004, started with a swarm of wasps attacking guests at East Kilbride Registry office as they waited for the bride's arrival. Michelle Doherty, it's weird spelling, Her aunt smashed an expensive digital camera trying to swat away one of the insects. When Michelle arrived, an insect flew up her dress, which triggered a panic attack. Once the ceremony was over, two minibuses that had been booked to take guests to the reception failed to show up. As if that wasn't enough, the couple lost their wedding video.
Ugh. Who watches those things? Do people actually ever watch them? I'm just curious. Of people who've purchased wedding videos, they've hired somebody to be the wedding videographer. Does anybody ever sit down, however many years later, and watch the video?
Yeah, after the divorce.
And they're crying and drinking themselves to death? Okay. I meant as a couple, like sitting down.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
No.
But probably pretty frequently. I mean, divorces are so common nowadays that it's probably a fairly common occurrence. Totally worth that wedding video when you need to cry afterwards and listen to Adele.
No, that's what porn is for.
Bob Renfrey's endless bad luck. Retired bus driver Bob Renfrey spent every Friday 13th in bed after repeated bad luck on the fateful day. He rode off four cars, fell into a river, lost a job, crashed a motorcycle, and fell through a plate glass door.
All on Friday the 13th.
Yeah. When he died
different
of cancer,
Fridays the 13th, not all on the same day, right?
Yep.
Okay.
When he died of cancer in 1998, Betty, his widow, decided to book his funeral for Friday the 13th of March for old time's sake. Unfortunately, all the undertakers in Rill were too busy. Bob would have seen the funny side, Betty said. There is more to come in the future. Oh, no, the article is continuing to say there's more to come in the future. Friday the 13th, 2029 could be disastrous, too. Asteroid 99942, Apophis, is forecast to pass by at a closer distance than any of our other satellites on that day. So there's an asteroid called Apophis, which on Friday the 13th, 2029, will pass closer than any satellite it currently is to Earth.
Sounds like
really close.
That's the end of the article?
That's the end of the article.
It did not mention the Apollo 13 thing.
What happened there?
Are you 100% sure that Apollo 13 was on the 13th?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the explosion inside the Apollo 13 thing happened on Friday the 13th.
How about that? Well, maybe they just didn't consider that disastrous.
Well, they, thought they were going to be lost in space forever, but were able to
And wait a minute, what day is it when you're up in space? Because if you are if you're on Earth, like right now, as we're doing the show, it's Friday the 13th, but people listening in Guam, we've had this caller in Guam, it's actually Saturday the 14th in Guam.
But
so if
Guam's not in space.
I know, but that's what I'm saying, like, what time is it if you're actually on the moon? You know what
I mean? You still have a position vertically above whatever place you're on the planet. So you have a direct line straight down from wherever you are.
Yeah, that's true. But you're not in orbit of the planet at the same time, are you? If you're up at
geosynchronous orbit, yes, absolutely you would be. Yeah. Unless you're not.
No, the moon's not in geosynchronous orbit, though. If they're over in the hanging out at the moon.
They weren't.
Nobody
on the
ever
moon.
Hangs out at the moon.
They were in space going to the moon, but they're not in orbit.
They're not in geosynchronous orbit, meaning that the Earth is spinning while they are up in space.
Right, and if they're not in orbit at all, they're moving.
I don't know if you can. A time starts to take on a different meaning when you're not on the face of the Earth.
Yes, and Ian, we know that you've done so many drugs that you are convinced that time does not actually exist.
Well, I mean, it
My
doesn't.
Guess would be that they would be going by Dallas time.
Fair enough. Let's go to, or what about Florida? Was it? Did they come out of Dallas? Wasn't Cape Canaveral?
Oh, Houston, we have a problem.
Right, but
was it
the
Apollo
control
13, Houston,
is
we have a problem?
Houston.
Right, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Flight control is Houston.
Sarah, in Albuquerque, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Yes, I heard this morning from the CBS News that our auto fatalities, what they average out is the number of people on a 747 jumbo airplane killed per week. So I think
they're more
said
than
something
that
like,
because it's Friday the 13th?
No. The whole year average, that's how many people died in auto crashes.
Sarah, are you superstitious?
So, a little bit.
A little bit. Like, what are some of your superstitions? Black cats, walking under ladders, salt over the shoulder.
I don't
looking
really
both ways
have
before
any,
you cross the street.
I don't think that counts.
Yes, I gotta like be scared to death when I'm crossing the street, run for my life. Yes,
that's
the
not a superstition.
The cars that are talking on the cell phone.
Well, I just know that she's scared of roads and cars and streets and, you know, things.
Well, yep, automotive crashes are scary things, so, you know, you can always stay inside, but then again, that doesn't prevent somebody from crashing through your front window. That happens from time to time. People just barreling right into the living room of a house.
Yep.
Thanks for your call tonight, Sarah. Toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. It's Free Talk Live. It is Free Talk Live. You're invited to join us here. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And you can Skype in at Skype username lrn.fm. And take control of the airwaves. Bring up whatever is on your mind. With you in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
And Johnson.
And Daryl.
And we've been talking about Friday the 13th, some terrible stories. According to Daryl, you had said that Apollo 13 was a Friday the 13th story. One of our folks over on Skype says it was actually a Monday. April 13th, 1970 was a Monday.
The Wikipedia article had it listed on the Triskaideca phobia, so I guess I thought that because it was there.
Well, somebody might be
Friday,
wrong,
yeah. But
yeah, people might be messing with
it. It was on the 13th.
Yeah. That's
so
a good point.
I did have that part right.
Which, if it was Triskaideca phobia, then it would qualify, right? Because as we determined earlier, Triskaideca phobia was fear of the number 13, as opposed to fear of Friday the 13th, which was a much longer, more complicated word
para
to pronounce.
Unless
you're Garfield, in which case you have fear of the Monday the 13th.
All right, so toll-free number tonight, 855-450-FREE. Since we're talking about horrible stories...
What's the fear of somebody eating all of your lasagna?
Since we're talking about horrible stories, here's one from The Morning Call, mcall.com. You might have heard the news headline recently about a woman who was charged with killing her adopted daughter in this like weird murder fetish fantasy, apparently.
It's not a reason to adopt a child.
Yeah, definitely not. Turns out that this woman... Sarah Packer, the adoptive mother of 14-year-old Grace Packer, has been charged along with her boyfriend, Jacob Sullivan, in the brutal death of the teenager who'd been reported missing last summer. Prosecutors said Packer and Sullivan acted out a rape and murder fantasy when they killed Grace in Richland Township last summer and then dismembered her body. Sarah, who is 41 of Horsham Township, Montgomery County, was charged Sunday with homicide, rape, conspiracy, kidnapping, and abuse of a corpse. Authorities also charged Sullivan, saying he and Packer plotted for nearly a year before the girl was killed in July. Northampton County officials issued a news release stating that, guess what? Ms. Parker, the raping murderer in this case, was actually a government worker. Not only was she a government worker, but she worked with the Department of Children and Families. She was suspended as an adoption supervisor. Before being suspended in 2010, she had taken in several foster children in that time, according to authorities. In their news release, she was said to have worked for the county from 2003 to 2010, but they did not include any further details. The statement read, quote, regarding the charges against Ms. Packer, the county cannot comment regarding ongoing job investigations, unquote. District Attorney John Morganelli said his office is not investigating Sarah Packer because there are no allegations against her at this point. County Controller Stephen Barron said Monday that Packer worked as a supervisor of adoptions in the county's Children, Youth, and Families Division.
So, hold on. What was that about? They said that there were no pending investigations against her, but she's been charged with a bunch of crimes. How were those not pending investigations?
Yeah, I don't understand the comments.
What do they mean there's no pending internal investigation?
I think that's what he means, in that there are no allegations that she did anything on the job at this point. So she murdered her own adopted daughter, not somebody else's.
On her time, not correct. While she was being paid for being there.
According to police, Detective Packer adopted Grace in 2004. So she was her adopted mother for more than a decade. Packer's employment status was listed as suspended, but Barron said he had no additional details as to why she had been suspended. Her salary at the time was $44,600. According to the elected controller, he spoke out because the public deserved to know about Packer. She left that job nearly a year before her husband at the time was charged by Allentown police in the first of two child sex abuse cases. Boy, she's got kind of a checkered history there. Her husband at the time alleged to be a child sex abuser, and now her new boyfriend and her allegedly murdered and raped her own adopted daughter. On September 23rd of 2010, he was charged with indecent assault of a victim under the age of 13 from a 2006 incident. And then on November 24th, 2010, he was charged by Allentown police in a separate filing of statutory sexual assault, involuntary deviant sexual intercourse of someone under the age of 16, and corruption of minors from a 2008 incident. Packer, who, let's see, this year she's now 40, but, oh no, this is the other Packer. This is the brother Packer, or no, husband Packer, sorry. David Packer, now 40, pleaded guilty to indecent assault and statutory sexual assault in both cases and was sentenced to 6 months to 5 years in prison. He'd been released and is required to register as a sexually violent predator. Sarah Packer was a foster parent to numerous children over the years, according to one of the police detectives who started working the case when Grace was reported missing from her home in July. She said that she knew of seven foster children that Sarah Packer had had in her care since 2004, but did not know of any investigations involving those children. Pettinato and Packer and her ex-husband took in Grace and her siblings in 2004 when Grace was three. They later adopted them through the Youth Services Department. The detective and family members described Grace as a sweet and very caring child who loved to read, and she was a 10th grader at the high school, was in learning support classes, and often befriended kids who had trouble making friends. Grace's school community was already saddened by the news of her death when the gruesome details of the slaying came out over the weekend. It's one thing to have somebody mysteriously disappear. It's another thing to find out that it was her own mother who committed the horrifying act as some sort of weird sexual fantasy, which makes it even more bizarre. Nadine Barrett, the mother of two students, said she'd hoped to keep the worst details from her kids, who are age 15 and 12, but social media made it impossible. She said, quote, "They have a lot of questions, and I tried to answer them the best I could. That unfortunately there are horrible people in this world who do horrible things." Barnett, who is the mother in this case, or the mother who just commented, did not know Grace personally, but heard from her children that the teen was a caring friend. She had joined with other mothers to organize a memorial service for the teen next week, followed by a community forum. The group has started an online fundraiser with the goal of creating a scholarship in Grace's name for students who have experienced child abuse. "We want to be her voice," she said. "It's sad to know that something like this was happening to a child in our community, and we hope that we can help it from happening again." The GoFundMe account is gofundme.com/3595TEW. That's a pretty horrifying story.
Yeah.
And just yet another story of, you know, this isn't the first time that government child workers have been discovered to have been some of the most absolutely horrifying people. Committing all kinds of, you know, nasty, deviant acts. This is probably one of the worst ones that I've ever heard of, but not the first story of its kind. And, you know, it shouldn't surprise someone. I mean, if you give somebody a job where, you know, they have some sort of dominion over children, you shouldn't be surprised when the people who want to wield power in that particular area are attracted to that line of work.
Yeah.
Whether it's Catholic priests having sex with their little acolyte boys,
altar boys,
or it's Department of Children and Families workers involved in, you know, child pornography, caging children. We've heard that about some foster parents where they'll put their foster kids in cages and starve them so that they can take more of the money from the foster checks for themselves, buy themselves, you know, steaks or whatever while they're feeding the kids gruel. I mean, these are not unheard of stories out there.
And what's the saying? Power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And people that want power wind up getting attracted to those positions where they can have power over others.
But what is the answer then? I mean, is the answer to not have a Department of Children's Services? Then what about all the kids who do need help out there? What is a libertarian solution?
Some sort of private charitable, you know, church group or something like that would take over.
Right. As with everything, the libertarian solution is you don't force people to pay for something. In a free market, in a free society, people that, you know, kidnap children would be held criminally liable for doing so. Now we have judges that are being paid to do so. So there is no, you know, no way that somebody can wind up holding the people accountable that are overseeing this, because they're all government bureaucrats.
Mm-hmm.
In a freer society, people would be held accountable for what they do.
The toll-free number, if you want to share your thoughts, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Coming up here, we got a whole another hour to go, which means plenty of time for you. Looks like the Geek Squad may be being paid by the FBI to poke around your computer. So you might want to consider not taking your computers to the Geek Squad, but we'll give you the update on that. The details coming up around the corner on Free Talk. The Free State Project has reached its goal of 20,000 liberty lovers who've pledged to move to New Hampshire and get active to achieve liberty in our lifetime. Perhaps you're trying to figure out what part of New Hampshire should be your destination. If so, consider Keene. You'll find more than 150 reasons to move to Keene at move.freekeene.com. Keene is famous for its historic, publicity-generating activism, as well as being the liberty media capital of the world. It's home to freekeene.com, New Hampshire's destination for liberty activism, news, and opinion. For years, we've been compiling over 150 reasons to move to Keene at move.freekeene.com, where you'll learn about some of what's happening here and what makes Keene a great place to live. If you love liberty, you'll probably enjoy anywhere you end up in the Shire. But do your due diligence first. Please visit move.freekeene.com for the full list of over 150 reasons to move to Keene. That's move.freekeene.com.
Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live. We're launching into the third hour here. We got plenty of time for you to share your thoughts with us. If you want to join us, our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. It's Friday the 13th. We talked about some horrifying Friday the 13th related stories with you in the studio tonight. It's Ian.
And Johnson.
And Daryl.
Also, we're going to continue. We'll take your calls and thoughts. Coming up, Johnson's going to tell us how to get a narcissist to feel empathy. Mm-hmm. And a narcissist is someone who loves themselves. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Like, yeah. More than anyone.
Right.
That kind of thing. We'll get into that. But first, John is on the line with us here in Long Island. You're on Free Talk Live. Hello, John. Listening to LRN.FM.
Yes. Good evening, gentlemen.
Welcome.
Okay. You know, you guys were talking about, you know, Friday the 13th. I believe that most people could be 40-60%. Have superstitions, not so much about numbers or whatever else, but just some things in their life. So we can relate to that. But what I want to know is why, let's say in Manhattan, some buildings don't have a 13th floor.
Yeah, that's true.
And the funny thing is, you know, being an estimator, I look at the architects or the engineers' blueprints, and they'll say it's the 13th. It's called the 14th floor, but it's really the 13th floor.
Mm-hmm.
Or the same thing above that. It could be it's really the 25th floor, but it's called the 26th floor because they don't include the 13th floor.
Right. And then I've been in buildings before. And to answer your question, it's because some people are superstitious or they know that other people are superstitious. So they'll, you know, play to the superstition. But going to the floor numbering thing, I've been in buildings to where the floor that you walk in on, they refer to as the ground floor.
Mm-hmm. And then the second floor is the first floor.
Yeah, the second floor is the first floor. So, you know, floor numbering is weird. And some people just, you know, oh, we're not going to do a 13th floor. There are some airlines that they don't have a 13th row of seats.
Really?
It goes 11, 12, 14,
so
15.
Dumb. Like, I
but I mean,
go ahead.
You know, intelligent minds, you know, we could see that it's a superstition. And as an architect or an engineer would say, no, it's not, it's called this, but it's really this. I find that very weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's bizarre. I mean, look, if the idea is that 13 or the 13th thing or whatever is somehow dangerous or more bad than others of the same similar thing. So like somehow the 13th floor is going to be more likely to have murders or something on it or
the
collapse.
The 13th guest at your party is more likely to wind up killing everybody is what some people think.
The other thing is I think everybody has, it might not be the number 13, but I think everybody has like a little superstition in them somehow, you know, embedded in them. I don't know, when they were born, you know, raised up or whatever, but it's basically a farce.
Yeah, absolutely. It's garbage. I mean, I remember reading books about them when I was a kid and being entertained by them, but ultimately never really taking any of it very seriously. But the point I was kind of trying to make here was, okay, even if there was something to it, and I don't believe that there is, but even if there was something to it that, you know, statistically the 13th floor has more bad things happen on it, then what, do you think you're fooling the universe by calling it floor 14? I mean, if indeed it is the universe that is having these bad things happen on the 13th
floor.
Well,
the universe is easily confused.
So are humans. And guys, I missed King Vention, by the way.
No, it's Keenvention didn't happen, so you actually didn't.
I know, I missed it.
No, he missed.
That's why
they're not being one.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Exactly.
About that. Well, anybody else is free to start a Keenvention. I'm burying it as far as my activism is concerned. But, you know, if somebody else wants it.
I miss seeing you guys there. That's all.
Oh, right on. Hey, man. Well, so it sounds like you went to one of the previous ones then.
Yeah. I seen Daryl with his flip-flops, you know, in October.
Yep.
Hey, well, you know, you can always relive it by going to keenvention.info, and you can watch the various different Keenvention videos there. All the panel discussions are still up on YouTube, and they're still relevant. They're still interesting. So thanks for your call tonight.
Definitely.
And
if you watch,
appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks, dude.
If you watch Keenvention 2014 and then Keenvention 2015, you will notice that I'm a lot smaller.
Yeah, you go from Fat Daryl to not really fat at all, Daryl.
Right.
And now what, 199 pounds? Where are you at right now?
197 this morning.
You said you put on a little bit of weight recently?
From this time last year, I've put on about 20 pounds, mm-hmm. was up about 35.
I couldn't tell. I mean, you still look super skinny to me.
I'm glad that I weigh less than you, considering that you're considerably taller than me, but I'm glad that I weigh less than you now.
But you said you're going to be cranking at the gym and doing more cardio.
Yeah, shooting back down to about 175.
Have you been doing just more weightlifting rather than cardio or something? Or?
No, more cardio. So basically, I'm doing a modified version of CrossFit.
Okay.
Where you're mixing cardio and weights into the same workout.
Gotcha.
It's what they call high impact intensity
just
training.
Don't accidentally let go of any of the weights while
you're... Woo! No. Then the little lunk alert goes off.
Oh, you're doing... Okay. Yeah, that's right, because your gym was part of that weird closing.
My gym, or not mine, the one that I had been going to for a year and a half, just, you know, a day after taking my payment for October, decided to suddenly close and not give anybody any warning.
Mm-hmm. What happened with that?
I wound up getting a hold of my credit union, mm-hmm. and they undid the ACH.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. So now the gym that I'm going to is $15 per month cheaper.
Wow.
And I can go to any of their facilities anywhere in the world instead of having one facility in tiny little Keene, New Hampshire to choose from.
And you got the nifty massage and tanning. And
there's way more babes at the new gym, right?
Yeah.
Win-win-win. Toll-free number tonight, 855-453.
Unfortunately, when I go to the gym,
yeah.
I focus on working out, not hitting on the attractive women who are also there working out.
It's still nice to look at.
Oh, they're nice to look at, sure.
Yeah. Let's go to Tom in Nashua, New Hampshire. You're on Free Talk Live. Hello, Tom.
Yeah, it's about the Martin Luther King holiday, Monday. Now, civil rights leaders worked a whole lot working with the bureaucrats there to have it officially declared. Yeah, this coming Monday is a government-imposed holiday.
So government offices are closed. Are radio stations going to be closed? Do I get to work on Monday, or do I wind up, you know, not working next week?
I would think stations would be open. Go ahead, Tom.
What I'm getting at here is these civil rights activists. They're so smart. They finally push and get Martin Luther King holiday declared a federal and a government-imposed holiday. So that means if you get arrested for driving while black Friday night, then you're going to spend Friday night, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday getting the toilet plunger worked up your rear end before they finally bring you to court on Tuesday. If
well,
there's anything
that's
left
you know, that's an exaggeration. I mean, rape isn't as common as you probably think that it is in jails or prisons. But in the case, but you are making a good point generally that a long weekend means that it's a longer time before you get arraigned and get released. If
right,
you get picked
and,
up on Friday night, you're screwed.
And Martin Luther King Day has been a holiday for close to 30 years, so it's not something that happened, you know, here recently.
But it's also, you know, notice that they use this as an excuse to close the courthouse so you wait rot in jail for an extra day. But when they want a search warrant at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday morning, there's a judge on duty for that they can contact at any hour of the day or night. And, see, now, Martin Luther King, he made that big speech about, I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And parents need to teach their children, you know, not to be prejudiced against anybody based on, like, their skin color. You know, like, when I say I hate cops and I hate smokers and I don't like queers, they made these choices. You know, it's not like this was...
gay people did not make...
No, being gay is not a choice.
No, Tom. It's, I don't know how many times we have to tell you about that. I mean, look, thanks for the... He just hung up. Thanks for the call. I don't know how much we have... How many times we have to explain it.
I think the problem is that he chose to be straight. I think that's the real problem.
Tom
apparently chose it. He grew up, he was looking at girls and he was like, you know, and looking at guys and he was just like, well... You know, I'm really attracted to those guys, but I'm going to choose to be straight.
It's ridiculous.
Tom
apparently
chose
that's what's going
to be
on.
A bigot.
855, 450, free. That
but
much is
obviously
true.
Obviously, he's attracted to men. He chose to be straight.
This is Free Talk Live. It is Free Talk Live. Dial on in toll free and join us on the radio waves. Our number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Joining you here in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
And Johnson.
And Daryl.
So, of course, you can take control of the airwaves and bring up whatever you want. Also, if you've got Bitcoin, I want you to download the official wallet of Free Talk Live. Not only does it allow you to hold Bitcoin, but it also has multiple other cryptocurrencies built in. In fact, I was actually just using it during the break there to send a little bit of Bitcoin. It's got Ether, it's got Dash, and a number of others, including the new Ether Classic, the REP tokens, Litecoin, Zcash, and I believe that Monero is next on deck. They've finished up the code for Monero, but they're doing some tweaks to the Jax wallet to speed it up. Before they go adding more cryptocurrencies to it. That's at least according to an interview we did with Anthony DeOrio, who is the creator of the Jax wallet. He's also the founder or one of the founders of Ethereum. And so not only is it just an amazing multi-currency wallet, but also it allows you to shapeshift between them, meaning that if you have Bitcoin, but you want to turn that into some Dash or some Ether, you can easily do that right there from within the wallet. Plus, it's easy to back up the wallet and recover your funds if necessary. Jax is striving to give you command over your digital life. Coins, contracts, currencies, identity, and more. It's your digital command center in the palm of your hand. It's Jax, the official wallet of Free Talk Live. You can get yours at jax.io, J-A-X-X.io. And it's good for your not only just your phone, but also laptop, if you're desktop computer, tablet, whether you're running Windows, Mac, Linux, or you just want a browser plugin for Chrome or Firefox, plus iOS or Android devices. It truly is a cross-platform wallet in addition to having all those awesome features we talked about. So Jax.io, J-A-X-X.io, or your Google or Apple app stores. And speaking of tech stuff, there was a disturbing news from TechDirt a few days ago. Story is about the FBI and the Geek Squad. According to TechDirt, law enforcement has a number of informants working for it and the companies that already pay their paychecks, like UPS, for example. It already has also has a number of government employees working for the TSA, keeping their eyes peeled for suspicious amounts of cash that it can swoop in and seize. And unsurprisingly, the
I think we've talked about the TSA informants.
Have we? I don't know.
I feel like we have.
All right. Well, I don't remember it. So what do we need to know?
So, you know, basically there's some informants that the DEA is paying off for tips on people that might be drug dealers or trying to take drugs. So instead of going through the TSA procedures, they'll call up somebody from the DEA, and then they're getting, you know, they're getting kickbacks from the seizures.
So these are TSA employees who are doing this. Well, now, unsurprisingly, the FBI also has a number of paid informants, including those working at Best Buy, Geek Squad by day, government informants by day, according to TechDirt.com. According to court records, Geek Squad technician John Trey Westfall, an FBI informant, reported he accidentally located on Rhett Meyers' computer an image of a fully nude, white, prepubescent female on her hands and knees on a bed with a brown choker-type collar around her neck. Westfall notified his boss, Justin Mead, and also an FBI informant, who alerted colleague Randall Ratliff, another FBI informant at Best Buy, as well as the FBI, claiming the image met the definition of child pornography and was tied to a series of illicit pictures known as the Jenny Shots. Agent Tracy Riley seized the hard drive. That was an excerpt from some sort of, I don't know, other document. It's not made clear here. Not necessarily a problem, considering the companies performing computer electronic device repair are legally required to report discovered child porn to law enforcement. The difference here is the paycheck. This Geek Squad member had been paid $500 for digging around in customers' computers and reporting his findings to the FBI. That changes the motivation from legal obligation to a chance to earn extra cash by digging around in files that were not essential to the repair work at hand. More of a problem is the FBI's tactics. While it possibly could have simply pointed to the legal obligation that Best Buy has to report discovered child porn, it proactively destroyed this argument by apparently trying to cover up the origin of its investigation, as well as a couple of warrantless searches. Quote, Setting aside the issue of whether the search of the computer constituted an illegal search by private individuals acting as government agents, the FBI undertook a series of dishonest measures in hopes of building a case, according to James Riddick, Rhett Meyers' San Clemente-based defense attorney. Riddick says agents conducted two additional searches of the computer without obtaining necessary warrants, lied to trick a federal magistrate judge into authorizing a search warrant, and then tried to cover up their misdeeds by initially hiding the records. The private search issue mentioned briefly in OC Weekly's report is mentioned briefly, but it should be examined more closely. Private searches are acceptable, but the introduction of cash payments, as well as the FBI having an official liaison with Best Buy, suggests the searches aren't really private. Instead, the FBI appears to be using private searches to route around warrant requirements. Now, that's not permissible, and even the FBI's belief that going after the worst of the worst isn't going to be enough to salvage these warrantless searches. So my understanding of what they're saying here is if a Best Buy employee or anybody else who happens to be doing computer repair on their own volition decides to paw through somebody's hard drive in areas that weren't necessary for the repair that they were doing, that may be a bad business practice, but it's not necessarily anything more than a contract violation. Whereas,
right, because that person is not the government.
Right.
So, therefore, they can't violate the Fourth Amendment because they're not a party to it.
If, however, that person is receiving a paycheck from the FBI on a regular basis for simply keeping their eyes peeled or looking a little deeper than they normally would look into somebody's machine, then that would make them a government contractor at that point.
I don't know. I think, you know, from a ethical standpoint, you're correct. But I think from a legal standpoint, and again, this is my, you know, non-legal, somewhat educated opinion here, I don't see it as really much different than somebody that calls the anonymous crime tip line where they offer cash rewards for the conviction of people.
That is different, though, because that is, you know, just a tip on somebody. It may or may not be true. If it does turn out to be true, then they do get paid. In this case, it sounds like these people are receiving payments from the FBI on a regular or semi-regular basis.
Is it regular as in every, you know, 30 days, every 2 weeks, or is it every time you turn somebody
maybe
in?
Maybe it's a bounty. Yeah.
If it's a bounty,
right.
It's no different than, you know, some nosy neighbor that calls the cops on everybody that walks out of 1313 Mockingbird Lane.
Yeah, that does blur the line somewhat. Is somebody receiving a bounty for information a government worker, a government contractor? The toll-free number here tonight, 855-450-FREE.
Legally, I don't think they are.
855-450-FREE. That's the toll-free number. You can share your thoughts on this case. There's more to the story from Tech Dirt. We'll continue with that. Then, coming up, we get the chance, narcissism. Johnson's got a story about that. How do you get one to feel empathy? We'll find out, and you can share your thoughts here on Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE.
DVD, books, music, instruments, periodicals, computers, software, electronics, photo, cell phone, office products, home and garden, bed and bath, furniture, kitchen, pet supplies, automotive, hardware, apparel, shoes, jewelry, grocery, healthcare, sports and outdoors, toys, games, used and more. It's a department store at your fingertips. Shop.freetalklive.com. Get all your shopping done, get a great deal, and a portion of your purchase goes to benefit Free Talk Live when you enter Amazon via shop.freetalklive.com.
Talk Live, the toll-free number allowing you to take control of the airwaves is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Looks like FBI informants could be everywhere, including in the Geek Squad at your local Best Buy. That's the story from techdirt.com. We'll continue with that coming up here in moments. Also, if you want to help Free Talk Live out and get your shopping done at the same time, then just head on over to shop.freetalklive.com where you can buy whatever it is that you need to through Amazon, and Free Talk Live gets a cut of the sale. It's really that simple. You know Amazon, great selection, great prices. Just go to shop.freetalklive.com, and Free Talk Live gets a portion of the sale. It really is that simple, and we appreciate it when you do that because it makes a big difference for us, because otherwise Amazon just keeps all of their profits. If you go to shop.freetalklive.com, they'll send some of it to Free Talk Live. Now, we're talking about a story from Tech Dirt, the FBI apparently paying off agents working for Geek Squad as essentially contractors for the FBI, or maybe they're bounty hunters. Either way, if they turn in people that they find something on their computer, I guess it's their obligation to turn in, you know, illegal stuff that they find accidentally or as part of their normal routine of being, technicians for Geek Squad. But if they actually go looking and hunting for things, then that's a different level.
So where is this information coming from? That's my question.
Did
the government out themselves?
According to this story here, it's actually the OC Weekly, Orange County, I believe.
But I mean, who in this arrangement is the one who's blabbermouthing? Is it the...
It's a guy who got arrested after the Geek Squad turned him in, basically. So it's coming from that case.
He probably did a FOIA request to get some information, would be my guess.
Well, the Geek Squad openly turned him in. So, in other words, I'm just saying, like, whatever, you know, like, now people are going to be like, I mean, what a horrible business idea.
Well, here, let me continue here. So I think what happened is the dude, you know, got turned in. Charges were brought against him. He got a defense attorney. And I don't think it was FOIA. It's probably just part of discovery.
Right.
You know, in the discovery, they're going to, unless it's a confidential informant, they'll name names.
Right.
And
I mean, I guess the only people who would be bringing their computer to, Geek Squad now are probably people that don't know that, hey, if you have a computer, you might have something incriminating on your computer just by very nature of having a computer. Because
you never know.
Yeah. You know, like, who knows what ends up in a cache and from some website or whatever, like, you know, things.
Or maybe your son or daughter or somebody else in the family was using the computer. And if it's you that goes and turns it in, then you'll be the one charged.
Yep.
The private search here Andrew Fleischman points out at Fault Lines that the government
also there's no chain of custody for chain of evidence or any of that stuff
to any prove these, who it was that put things there.
You know, any one of these Geek Squad people, and you know what's actually kind of also interesting is that any one of these Geek Squad people could also just contact somebody and be like, well, guess what, I'm going to put something on your computer unless you pay me.
They certainly could. Now, presumably, you know, there might be a way to prove that those files were put there at a certain time.
Maybe.
But it'd be hard.
Yep.
And it wouldn't, you know, it's even harder to do that stuff from inside a prison cell.
Yeah.
Awaiting trial. So according to Andrew Fleischman at Fault Lines, the government's spin on the paid private search issue is that it's wild speculation that the Best Buy employee was acting as a paid informant when he discovered the child porn doesn't hold up if the situation is reversed. AUSA Anthony Brown's defensive statement is nothing more than the noise of a double standard being erected. Quote, flipping the script for a minute, would an AUSA say it was wild speculation that a man was a drug dealer when the phone records show he regularly contacted a distributor, he was listed as a drug dealer in a special book of drug dealers, and had received $500 for drugs? Sorry to break it to you, Mr. Brown, but once you start getting paid for something, it's tough to argue that you're doing it for the love of the game. Unquote. In addition to these problems, the file discovered by the Best Buy tech was in unallocated space, something that points to almost nothing, legally speaking. Quote, in Reitmeier's case, the alleged Jenny image was found on unallocated trash space, meaning it could only be retrieved by carving with costly, highly sophisticated forensics tools. In other words, it's arguable a computer's owner wouldn't know of its existence. For example, malware can secretly implant files. Worse for the FBI, a federal appellate court unequivocally declared in February of 2011 that pictures found on an unallocated space did not constitute knowing possession because it's impossible to determine when, why, or who downloaded them.
Right.
The important detail was apparently glossed over in the FBI's warrant application to search Rademeier's home and personal devices. Quote, in hopes of overcoming this obstacle, they performed a sleight-of-hand maneuver, according to Reddit. The agents simply didn't alert the judge that the image in question had been buried in the unallocated space, and thus secured deceitful authorization for a 2012 raid on Rademeier's Laguna Niguel residence. Courts have shown an often excessive amount of empathy for the government's outrageous behavior when pursuing criminals. The fact that there's child porn involved budges the needle in the government's direction, but the obstacles the FBI has placed in its own way through its deceptive behavior may prevent it from salvaging this case. It's already on very shaky ground, with the presiding judge questioning agents, quote, odd memory losses, unquote, noting several discrepancies between the FBI's reports and its testimony and its perplexing opposition to turning over documents that the defense has requested. In any event, it appears the FBI has a vast network of informants, paid or otherwise, working for both private companies and for the federal government. Considering the FBI is already the beneficiary of legal reporting requirements, this move seems ill-advised. It jeopardizes the legitimacy of the evidence even before the FBI engages in the sort of self-sabotaging acts that it appears to have done here. And underneath it all is the perplexing and disturbing aversion to adhering to the Fourth Amendment that we've seen time and time again from law enforcement agencies, both at local and federal levels. Anything that can be done to avoid seeking a warrant and anything that creates an obfuscatory paper trail is deployed to make sure the accused faces an even more uphill battle once they arrive in court.
Now, Best Buy did actually issue an official company statement on this. The following statement from Best Buy regarding Geek Squad's role in the criminal child porn case of United States v. Mark Albert Rademeier. Best Buy and Geek Squad have no relationship with the FBI. From time to time, our repair agents discover material that may be child porn, and we have a legal and moral obligation to turn that material over to law enforcement. We're proud of our policy and share it with our customers before we begin any repair. Mm. Any circumstance in which an employee received payment from the FBI is the result of extremely poor individual judgment, is not something we tolerate, and is certainly not part of our normal business behavior.
So it's not part of their policy is what they're saying.
Yes. To be clear, our agents unintentionally find child porn as they try to make a repair to the customer that the customer is paying for. They are not looking for it. Our policies prohibit agents from doing anything other than what is necessary to solve the customer's problems so that we can maintain their privacy and keep up the volume of repairs. So Best Buy is essentially saying this is not in our policy, and if any of the people working for Geek Squad are doing this, mm-hmm. they are violating the employee policies.
Which there's really no way to see that, right? I mean, if their employee has somebody's hard drive and they're looking through it in areas where they're not authorized to be looking through it, there's really no way to find that out. Like, Best Buy would have no way of enforcing that because you can't tell who's searched, you know, how far they've searched through a hard drive or right. whatever. You just have to take the employee's word for it. Oh, yeah,
right.
I just looked in the areas I was supposed to, even though they actually searched through the entire hard drive in the hopes of finding something so they can then get a bounty from the FBI.
Right.
It's very disturbing. So anyway, there's that story. Coming up here, Johnson, you've got a piece, and I don't know if it's – can we get into it? Do we have enough time for it?
Maybe. About, yeah,
about narcissists
yep.
and how to get them to feel empathy. Now, a narcissist, somebody who is totally in love with themselves, this is not the same thing as a psychopath, right? Because generally right, a psychopath no. is somebody who also doesn't feel any empathy
right.
towards others. So if a psychopath is someone who can't even feel empathy. So this, I guess, is a way to get a narcissist to actually feel it.
Yep.
We'll get into that coming up here from the Psychology Blog, and you can join us here toll-free. Our number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Or you can take control of the airwaves and bring up whatever is on your mind. Plus, we've got Skype, and the Skype username is lrn.fm. We're Free Talk Live coming up. Free Talk Live. Moments remain here. Enough time for you. If you join us right now, our number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We do have Skype, and the Skype username is lrn.fm. If you want to support Free Talk Live, please become a Free Talk Live amplifier today. Go to amp.freetalklive.com. You'll get perks like access to the amp-only call-in lines, the amp-only Facebook group, the amp-only podcast, and more. You get all the details, and you can get signed up with any major credit card through PayPal, Visa, MasterCard, Bitcoin, right there on the website at amp.freetalklive.com. David is in New Mexico on Skype. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, can you hear me all right
yes,
tonight?
Sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, on things you were talking about. First of all, I wonder what it means superstitiously at the very moment said the phrase about throwing a pinch of salt over your shoulder. Just before you said that, I had reached into a bag of salt that I had grabbed a pinch, and I was about to throw it on my food, and then you said that, so I threw it over my left shoulder instead. So,
now, what's that? I remembered that one, but I don't really remember what it's for. Is it good luck or something? It's only
if you spill salt.
Yeah, it's only if you spill it, right? Okay.
Yeah, well, the tale is that from the painting, The Last Supper, Judas, you can see him. He has spilled the salt with his right elbow, and the lore is that one needs to then that was a bad thing, and the devil had something to do with it. And so if you spill salt, you're supposed to throw a pinch of salt over your left shoulder into the face of the devil.
Ah,
that was right,
because that will defeat Satan. Salt defeats
yeah
Satan.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah,
all right, what else?
As long as we're on that, another thing on you had questioned the number 13 about there being the 14th floor is really the 13th anyway, and people should know that. But it has to do with the labeling, not so much the actuality of being the 13th floor, but if it's labeled as such, that's what scares people off.
I understand what scares people. I'm just saying it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. But anyway, you're talking about you're about to talk about narcissism, and that ties into your CPS story. But first of all, the mother or the adoptive mother and boyfriend that raped, murdered, dismembered that her adoptive daughter a few months ago in Albuquerque, there was not an adoptive mother, but a biological mother who for somehow, some way enjoys watching men rape her 10-year-old daughter. And had done that on multiple occasions, and her current boyfriend was doing that along with a relative, a female a lesbian relative that was interested in girls. They were having sex with this girl while the mother watched, and they used drugs on her, meth and alcohol and whatever else for whatever, and they ended up killing the girl, and then they dismembered her right after that, and then tried to burn her body in the bathtub here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. So,
oh my God,
odd stuff out there. And then lastly, tying into CPS and your narcissism, And oh, so that that adoptive mother was a CPS or a child protective services worker or whatever,
something like that. Yeah.
And yeah, just like everything involving humans. I mean, I really like airplanes, so I became a pilot. I think that, you know, if you like controlling people, you will be attracted to being, you know, somebody with control over other people, sure. Whether a child were. Yeah. Yeah. And so I think that's both normal and abnormal psych in humans and is in our faces every day and explains abusive, controlling, wrongfully controlling behaviors by those around us, especially in government. And that's kind of
good comments, David. Thanks for sharing. Appreciate it. The toll free number is 855-450-FREE. Johnson,
maybe we have time for this.
Let's see if we can throw this in here from Cyblog.
So narcissists aren't much interested in other people's suffering, or for that matter, any of other people's feelings.
They only care about themselves.
Yep. Erica Hepper, author of a new study on the subject, explains that narcissists are a bit full of themselves, self-centered, don't seem too concerned about the effects that they have on other people. New research by Hepper and colleagues shows, though, that narcissists can be made to feel empathy if given a nudge in the right direction. The study, participants were split into two groups, low narcissists and high narcissists. Those high on narcissism in this study were not considered to have a clinical disorder. Hepper continues, people high in subclinical narcissism are psychologically healthy and well-adjusted, often even very successful, whereas people with NPD, narcissistic personality disorder, are inflexible and volatile and don't manage day-to-day life well. Both groups were given a passage to read which described a relationship breakup. As expected, the narcissist showed no empathy towards the story's protagonists, no matter how severe the story. This is normal for narcissists, whose interest in others is limited to garnering an audience for their antics or for exploitation. In another study, though, the narcissists were given a nudge in the right direction. High and low narcissists then watched a 10-minute video of a woman identified as Susan describing her experience as a victim of domestic violence. Sometimes beforehand, they were instructed to empathize with the following instruction. Imagine how Susan feels. Try and take her perspective in the video, imagining how she is feeling about what is happening.
Which is the definition of to empathize, yeah, is to exactly. Put oneself in someone else's shoes.
So they're basically telling them what to do and how to do it.
Right.
When the high narcissists were specifically told to imagine how the victim felt, their empathy suddenly kicked in. In comparison, those low on narcissism didn't need to be told, so instructing them to take the victim's perspective had no additional effect. The researchers even confirmed these results physiologically to check if the narcissists weren't saying what they thought was expected of them. The physiological measures also suggested they really were empathizing after being instructed to do so. Hepper thinks this simple technique of reminding narcissists to take another person's point of view can be useful. If we encourage narcissists to consider the situation from their teammate or friend's point of view, they are more likely to respond in a much more considerate or sympathetic way. It's not that narcissists can't feel for others, It's that they need reminding. The current findings imply that narcissists' low empathy is automatic instead of consciously suppressed or underreported, and that also perspective taking induces genuine change in the way the narcissist processes a distressed person's experience. I kind of found this interesting as I was just kind of thinking, like, what we need is like signs or videos or reminders for, you know, government offices, you know,
to try to put themselves in the shoes of their victims.
Yeah.
You mean?
Yeah. Constant reminders that, hey, you should feel empathy. You should, be doing this and this, you know, because it seems like narcissists tend to be very strongly attracted to those jobs.
You know, it's interesting that I think you bring up an interesting point. And would it be effective? Because in the case of what you're talking about, you're just talking about regular folks who right. happen to be narcissists
right.
who are in this study and asked to empathize with somebody, instructed on how to empathize. Place yourself in this person's shoes. How would you feel if you right. were this person? On the other hand, a government bureaucrat has other disincentives on top of, you know, just the fact that they are a government bureaucrat.
Right.
They are disincentivized from empathizing with their victims because it doesn't help them in their job to right. empathize with their victims. If they empathize, you know, if the DMV worker, the cold, nasty DMV worker right. who refused to give this guy, the guy in the beginning of the show who ended up suing the DMV and then right. taking $300,000 into the DMV mm-hmm. because he wanted to get even with them, if one of the DMV workers had tried to empathize with him initially, they might have gotten reamed out by their boss. So his initial point of before the whole lawsuit thing was he wanted to get a simple phone number from the DMV. If the first person he talked to had given him that phone number, it would have been against policy because that phone number was only for like intra communications between the departments. They don't want to get calls from the public. So they might have, you know, if they empathize with him, oh, well, this guy, you know, is feeling bad because he can't get the phone number. He just wants to be able to talk to us. So here's your, here's the phone number, sir. Well, then the word gets out that, you know, little miss phone number giveaway gave away the phone number. And then the boss calls her into the office and reams her out because, well, now this guy's calling left and right and asking all these questions, demanding all this customer service. You're in trouble, little Missy, for, you know, actually feeling something for your clients.
Right. And again, this reminds me of a lot of what was discussed in one of the hearings on FOIA request, to where, you know, the bureaucrats were basically saying, well, these people requesting information, they're causing all kinds of problems. Well, no, you not being responsive to their request is what causes the problems.
Right, and usually they had some kind of problem that that made them want to put the FOIA information request in. Like, there was some sort of issue that had happened to them by the hands of some of these bureaucrats, some of these narcissistic bureaucrats, that made them want to file that request in the first place. And now the bureaucrats are all complaining about the requests being filed and them having to do their jobs.
Right. And then, you know, somebody wanted that information bad enough that they wound up spending thousands of dollars to hire lawyers and file a lawsuit.
Speaking of hearings, I believe we recorded some of that hearing, and it will probably appear, at least in part. I'm not sure if I'm going to put full hearings up or just the Daryl excerpts, but some of that stuff will be going up probably sometime this weekend at freekeen.com, and I imagine you'll put it up on libertylobby.info as well. We'll see you tomorrow night, freetalklive.com.
Hi, I'm Derek J. I don't want a politician to represent me. To me, government is the idea that one group of people can coerce everyone to comply with an edict or face increasing punishments up to and including death. Despite perhaps the most noble of intentions, the best government services are a far cry from what could be provided for by voluntary interactions. Besides, the people who call themselves the government wage wars and put peaceful people in jail for crimes involving no victims. If Starbucks used some of its money to drop bombs, I wouldn't shop there. So why would I support the American Empire? The Empire does not require my consent.
Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree. You can order your copy of the Director's Cut DVD now at victimlesscrimespree.com.